Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Survivor Specialist Sean and McKenna are back to rewind episode 2 of season 46. There's a lot of numbers.
There are.
And as those who have listened to our Patreon content already, we are not good with numbers.
No, we're still here to talk about, you know what, another pretty solid episode of Survivor, if I do say so myself.
Any Survivor is good Survivor for me. I just like it on my screen. So I dislike more some seasons more than others, but you know, as a season is airing, I think it's the best show under the sun.
Well, speaking of that, how did you feel about this episode of 46? I know a lot of people were kind of talking, what are the 2 hours necessary? Does it give us a lot to talk about today? Like, what are your initial opinions of this week's episode?
I feel like I'm missing a reward challenge. Like, I'm missing that structure that old school Survivor gives us. So, like, in Cambodia, which we watched over on the Patreon, I very much missed that, like, structure of, you know, we're doing something. So in the episode of Cambodia, episode 3 that we're watching, there was a swap. So that took place of the reward challenge. And so I am missing a little bit more of that classic Survivor structure. But I only really notice the length when I'm at commercial breaks.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. Especially when a commercial break happens during the middle of a challenge. But we'll get there. Don't worry.
Right.
I'm sure that'll come up at some point today. Yeah, I feel like this episode really felt clear that this season wasn't filmed in a way where they expected to have this much time. Obviously, like with 45, they knew they had 90-minute episodes the entire season, and they filmed it a little differently, changed the content of the season to kind of accommodate for that. And with 46, they were hoping they would get 90-minute episodes, but they weren't sure. So they kind of had to plan for their regular 60-minute time slot. Mm-hmm. And while we get all this wonderful camp life in this episode because of it, I understand the complaints that like the first hour of this episode dragged a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that, but I feel like with each segment, it was like renewed. So like when we went to each different beach, there was a different feel, but I was like, oh, we're going back to that tribe again. Like, that's weird, because typically we spend a chunk, go do something. So even if there's a commercial, I still feel like we should continue with where we were and just kind of do it in bigger chunks. But I can see why, like, as an editor, I can see why that they didn't, because it's showing more passage of time. And speaking of the editing, it, like, they, I feel like CBS just was like, all right, go wild. Because this season, I feel like, is unlike any season that we have had before in terms of the editing, with all of those slow dramatic shots, with the cut in the challenge, and being back at camp with all the, like, drama, like, oh, we just lost shots. Like, adding these moments, plus, like, the rogue confessionals. I can't remember the last time we had a rogue confessional like that, like Marquesas. I mean, there's probably some after that, but, like, ones stick out to me are, like, Marquesas.
And by rogue confession, you're talking about the moments where...
they're talking to camera where it's in camp without the lower third.
Right. It's like that... it's that thing that we saw in, like, all those NBC sitcoms when they're, like, talking to the camera and stuff, right? Like the classic, like, John Krasinski look at the camera comment, right? But yeah, it's weird. It's different, but I like it. I'm enjoying it so far. And we're here with another rewind. And this week, again, we're coming at you with our new outwit, outplay, and outlast moments of the episode, how they impact this season, and what previous moments in Survivor they remind us of.
So let's get into outwit. We had a few contenders for outwit, but we have decided to go with the fake idol. There have been many a fake idol in Survivor history, which we have covered before. We actually just rewatched the Gabon fake idol episode during the off season. And that was a really good episode over on the Patreon where we kind of, like, deep dive Gabon a little bit. I still don't like it. Even after the deep dive. But John really still can't convince me to like Gabon, but it is a really good talk. Back to the fake idols of it all. John.
Yeah. So obviously in this episode where we see the fake idol has been made, and this is kind of the interesting thing when it comes to fake idols in Survivor. There are a couple of different ways you can use them. You can use them to convince someone they have an idol. You can use them to convince someone that you have an idol. Or you can kind of use it like this new way we saw in 46, where you're convincing someone they have an idol so they don't use the actual advantage that they do have.
John, I have a question for you.
Okay.
This happened after watching the episode. So one person can play an advantage and an idol in the same tribal council. Say, like, I would like to steal your vote and play an idol for myself.
Yep.
That's valid. Shot in the dark is considered an advantage, not an idol. So what is stopping you from playing your shot in the dark? Like, I would want to save the idol and risk my shot in the dark and then play the idol after if that does not work. Is there a rule in Survivor that, like, that does not, that can't happen?
I see what you're saying. And because, it's a good, like, it's a good question.
I'd rather keep, just in case my 1-in-6 shot hits, I'd rather keep my guaranteed 1-in-1 shot.
That's a really good question, because I think there's this, we're entering this new era. I mean, obviously we're in a new era of Survivor now, but we kind of have to enter into a new era of strategy. And Jeff Probst and pregame press and everything said, like, we are starting to see an evolution of strategy revolving around the rules of the new era at this point. The shot in the dark does change the way you kind of have to approach votes, right? We see less people, you know, letting people in on votes. It's kind of like the same as we did when idols were first invented. And brought into the series, but because of the fact that everyone has a shot in the dark, people have to be a lot more cutthroat with their blindsides in order to prevent the chances of them being played. With I don't know the rules specifically as to whether or not you can play your shot in the dark. If it lands, if it doesn't land, can you then play an idol afterwards? I don't know if there's anything in the rules pertaining to that. However, I do think there is some strategy in keeping your shot in the dark, because like we kind of saw last season after Caleb uses his shot in the dark, once your shot in the dark's gone, it becomes a lot safer to vote for you.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no chance of someone having a shot in the dark at that point. If you True. Can guarantee someone doesn't have a shot in the dark, it's really easy to go against them. So that's where I think a lot of the ingenuity comes of using this fake idol in this yeah. way. I know a lot of people on the internet are saying like it goes too far, but it makes sense from a strategic standpoint to take the chances from 1 in 6 to 0% chance of, yeah. of this not working.
Yeah, exactly. Because obviously if they're saving their shot in the dark, they can't just go back and use it, because now mm-hmm. they're screwed because they played a fake idol.
Exactly. And from what I also gathered from like Jess's exit press and everything, Jess wasn't playing 100% and wasn't mm-hmm. really wanting to play 100%. Wasn't really giving it her all at this point anyways, but still plays this idol, which is risky, right? Because like it kind of blows up some people's positions in the game. Obviously, Bonu had no idea this, as far as we're aware from the edit, had mm-hmm. no idea this fake idol was a thing. Yeah. So who knows how that's going to go. Mm-hmm. But I think playing the idol here is the safer thing, because it's a way to... We've seen people play idols and then be able to like get the vote off of them moving forward. I don't yeah. think you can do that with the shot in the dark.
So I'm going to go into my fake idol moment here, because Jess mentions to Q, like, this looks like something we all have on like our water bottles, or like something just very common. I don't think this is a real idol. Are you sure you found this? She's like questioning the legitimacy of the idol. So I wanted to go to David versus Goliath with Dr. Allison finding that idol. And she knows that there is a high likely that this is a fake idol, but she plays it anyway, just in case that there is that chance that it is a real idol. It wasn't like well hidden. It was just kind of there. And unlike Jess, Dr. Allison naturally finds it within the environment. But yeah, the questioning the legitimacy but still playing it is kind of where I'm drawing my moment from.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I don't think there's ever any harm in attempting to play a fake idol.
No.
Especially like if you don't have any way of confirming whether or not it's real, because what if it is real and it's actually the thing that saves you in the game?
Because, I mean, Jess's fake idol was the exact same, just maybe a little bit shorter. Like,
yeah.
These idols nowadays are being made to have fakes so that, you know, you can have these moments of fake idols and stuff like that, because they loved those moments mm-hmm. earlier, especially with Bob
yeah.
and making his like look really real. They've like strayed away from the little green man or the little turtle, because yeah. you can't really recreate any of that.
It's one of the interesting things about the new era and how it's very clear they are giving you the means to make these fake idols. Like, they're providing you with the materials to make something that looks close enough to an idol. It's pretty realistic.
I mean, heck, 43 with the beads.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, literally. Everyone was right?
given a bead, and those beads had to make an idol. Like,
yeah. So at this point in the new era, someone hands you some beads and say, this is an idol. You're like, sure is. I have no reason to not think it is.
Exactly. So it gets a little bit trickier when we talk about David versus Goliath and like the legitimacy of that idol. But, you know, let's go into yours, John, because that is also a pretty convincing idol.
Big thing that's really interesting about this is there isn't a big history of fake idols actually being played in Survivor. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they are hidden in a way. I mean, I obviously the big fake idol play that everyone remembers is the Gabon one. But because we just talked about it on the Patreon, we had a...
Really? That's the only big one we remember?
No, it's not. But it, like that, we had an agreement between the two of us. Neither of us could bring that up as our outwit this week because it would be unfair because we just already discussed it and everything. And there's a lot of negativity around that fake idol because that was a malicious play, right? At least when comparing that to 46, it's too far. Like, there was no need to do that. Whereas in 46, there's a strategic reasoning to using this fake idol. But the moment that I want to bring up is the fake idol that David Wright makes in the Millennials versus Gen X finale and hides in the marked coconut so Jay finds it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a different way of kind of approaching this. In 46, there's the fear that Jess is going to, you know, play her shot in the dirt. But in Millennials versus Gen X, there's a fear Jay might actually just find an idol. And if you make a fake idol, put it out there and ensure he finds it, it's going to make him stop looking for an idol. If there does happen to actually be one out there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, putting it in that marked coconut and having it be kind of naturally in the environment was really smart to like keep that where he found his idol. Now, they tried to put the idol in the exact same spot that Tiffany found it, but when it's not like as obvious as a marked coconut, it might be hard for someone who's kind of like been a little disconnected and brain foggy to be able to find something that's not right in front of her face.
Well, and again, it seems like Jess wasn't really trying to find it, and that's what it comes down to. I'm sure if Jess was like intentionally looking, but at the same time, you have two people in your tribe saying, hey, you gotta find an idol because like everyone's gunning for you. And it's like, well, numbers tell me that on our tribe of five, the three of us would mean I don't need to do that. So clearly something's here.
Yeah.
Right. There's these little things and these little hints that are like, okay, this is pretty futile. Mm-hmm. But the thing with Jay and the like how David places it, I think David has an easier time hiding this idol and ensuring someone finds it than Tiffany and Kenzie
for sure.
Because
it's a marked coconut.
It's a marked coconut. David Wright literally just has to put it on the path to the well.
Mm-hmm.
Like he just puts it there. And then Jay's like strolling along the path. It's like, oh my God, there's a marked coconut. I know what this means. There's an idol in here.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting because David's using previous game knowledge in order to ensure Jay finds it. Because presumably at this point, everyone knows idols are hidden in marked coconuts.
Or Mark, because there was a Mark Bamboo, I think, on Millennial Beach.
Right. But, like, they know to be looking out for these marks when they're looking for idols at this point, because they've seen idols been played and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's David just using his game knowledge and applying it. And, I mean, yes, you have to kind of rely on someone else also coming to the same conclusion you do. But luckily, Jay is someone who is predictable enough. You can assume that he's going to think that way.
Yeah, exactly. So, do you have anything else to add for fake idols for our outwit?
I honestly feel like we're probably going to see more of them moving forward.
I mean, yeah, if they keep these idols looking the way that they do, for sure.
And not even that. It's like also just because it makes sense exactly the way it's used here. I don't know if people are going to get away with it the way that Tiffany Q and Kenzie do here. But if you can use fake idols in order to ensure people that, hey, you don't need to use your shot in the dark, it's like it'll probably happen more often. The big thing I think that should make you more wary as a Survivor fan, if you find these idols, obviously, like, again, Jess didn't find the idol. Hugh eventually just gave it to her.
Yeah.
But had she found it, because I think, from my understanding of the way it's presented in the episode, they just took the idol letter and put the fake idol in with it, right?
Yeah, because it has beware on the other one.
Exactly. Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at is if you are going out there on Survivor 47, 48, whatever, in the future, and you are looking around in the pre-merge and you find a regular idol, you should probably be really skeptical about it, because every season we have seen in this new era has beware advantages, not regular idols in the pre-merge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, outplay, my favorite category. We are talking anything from challenges to that's it. That's all we got in this episode. It's just a challenge.
It's true. Yeah.
We have no journey this episode. We have none of that. So outplay, we are talking the challenge of the episode. And we decided to go with cart challenges because we have a cart in this episode. And I like this a lot. This is similar to a challenge that they use a good amount called Dragging the Dragon, which, John, I'll have you get into, where it's you have to assemble a cart and make a double-sided puzzle, which it's not as complicated as the word puzzle where, like, the positioning of each letter matters. It's just the pieces are on the front and the back. The design is on the front and the back, but... John, I'll let you talk your episode first. Moment first.
My moment. I did choose Dragging the Dragon, which again is a challenge that's been used, I think, 4 or 5 times at this point. Mm-hmm. It's essentially this. But because all you listeners know that my outplay is by far the best, make sure you like and subscribe. Click like on this video and just because I'm right. Actually, you know what? If you agree, whether you agree with me or McKenna, or you disagree with both of us, like the video.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm specifically going with the Cambodia time. So the first time this challenge was used in Cagayan, it was a premiere. Quite frankly, I just wanted to avoid premieres when I was referring things. And I think the Cambodia one's a little more interesting because in Cambodia, we have 4 people who competed in that first initial Cagayan challenge.
Wu doesn't count.
Wu does count. He is on the season. He counts. But more importantly...
Is he on Cambodia is the bigger question.
I was referring to Cambodia, in all honesty, but that's fine.
Oh, really?
More importantly, we have 3 members of Luzon who were the people who lost this challenge in Cagayan doing it. And the big thing, in 46, when we see this cart challenge, they have to they do the machete chop and cut through the rope to drop the wheels, and then they have to put the wheels on the cart. Mm-hmm. And there's some really interesting things with this cart. There's some interesting things in the edit with this challenge, and not just the fact that there's a commercial in the middle of it. There's a moment where Jess really specifies, make sure you pin those wheels in.
Yeah.
And they focus on
uses Nami? The specific name
yeah.
of the pins.
Yes.
And I'm just like, okay, Jeff.
Like, and at that time they're really focusing. I think it's Nami that they're focusing on, but it might be one of the other 2 tribes. And like them jamming the wheel on and like getting the pin in. It really seemed like they were setting up for one of these wheels to fall off one of these carts.
Right? And then we just see it happen in Cambodia where they're like, okay, yeah, pin.
Yeah. Like no mention of it whatsoever. Cambodia is quite simple, except for the fact that what they have to do with the card is way more intense than what they had to do here. And the challenge in Cambodia is quite simple. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we see that the name of this challenge is Dragon the Dragon, despite the fact that, you know, there's no dragon involved. But... in Cambodia, they have to put the wheels on,
carts
already assembled.
Carts already
they
assembled.
Have to get
they have to get the keys,
which unlock the chests. Except they don't actually unlock the chests; they unlock the chains that are holding the chest down.
Yeah,
so that they can put the chest on the cart, and they continue doing that. They have to get through, and then there's the fence that they have to push the. The chests, all 3 chests, and the cart through.
And then the obstacle bumps. Like, there's coconut logs, sand. Yeah.
Yeah, quite similar to what they did in the end of this. We see multiple strategies again of people going and clearing all the obstacles first versus like taking them one at a time and just like trying to muscle through them. And then they, you know, take out the puzzle pieces and solve the puzzle.
Yep. Yeah. I really like this episode of Cambodia after watching it for the Patreon. So if you have not listened to that episode, it's over on the Patreon where we deep dive this episode of Cambodia. It's got a lot of different aspects that relate to this episode as well. So like we have a little bit of Matt talk. So episode 3 of Cambodia, we got a rat. So yeah, I like this episode of this reference for the challenge. It is extremely similar. We see Takeo clear all the obstacles out just like Nami. And even with some of the puzzle pieces, when they're constructing it, they have to like hold them a certain way to try and get other pieces in. So it's a little bit similar to the words, but not as strenuous.
Yeah, but also that being said, the way that they approach this dragon puzzle at the end with, not Takeo did it fine, but with the way Bion and Angkor approach this third section of the dragon puzzle is so weird, because rather than putting the bottom pieces in first, they're all trying to put the top pieces in first.
Because they could work from either side, like on the sides,
like,
they could work.
I get it. It's just like you're doing more work than you need to do.
I found this piece.
Yeah, it's just doing way more work than you needed to, and making it more difficult for yourselves. It's fine. I'm just nitpicking this challenge from nearly 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm going to go even further back. I'm actually going to Micronesia with mine. We also talked about this episode, but for last season, it is the opening challenge, and they have to put together the cart, and the wheels are puzzle wheels. And what is different and interesting about this challenge is they do have to get carts, but then also people are meant to be, they do have to get chests, but people are meant to be on these carts as well. And so when, you know, you hit a tree root, you get like thrown off or like jumbled, and the way that you have to drag this cart is just so much more dangerous and owie than any of the other cart moments, because you can't clear your obstacles. The majority of the obstacles are just the environment.
Yeah. And the course is a lot longer too. Like there was a lot longer that they had to drag these cars.
Room for collision.
They crossed over, right?
It wasn't a crossover, but it was just like your lane together.
Right.
Like, and so, you know, just maneuvering, you can bump into people.
Right. The interesting thing about this is, it didn't matter if you have the pin for the end of your cartwheel. Your cartwheel could still fall apart because it's 4 puzzle pieces.
Yeah, it's insane. So they have a puzzle element, which it's not totally a puzzle because it's like, it's a wheel. You just have a few pieces that put together, but it could all just fall apart at any moment.
While someone's riding this cart.
Exactly, and pulling it at as fast as they can. Like, this challenge, cart challenge, is insane.
How does this challenge end again? Is it a puzzle?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a puzzle. And the fans actually win, and the favorites lose it.
That's right. The favorites had a lot of struggle with their moving their cart, if I remember this challenge correctly.
Because I think they went so fast on trying to put the pieces together.
They thought they were gaming the system, but the system gamed them instead.
Exactly, because they're so big and bad.
I do like this comparison. In the end, like, there aren't a lot of cart challenges that are different than these in Survivor history, right?
Well, so the only other cart challenge that happens when we looked it up was in Guatemala, where they like race down that chute in a cart. Otherwise, you know, you have South Pacific with a wheelbarrow, but pretty much dragging the dragon is the cart challenge. They've never done the puzzle piece Micronesia challenge again. It's pretty much dragging the dragon, is it?
Yeah, interesting. I do really like the South Pacific one because that's the one where they have to convert the wheelbarrow into a slingshot, right?
Yes. So you have that element of dragging the dragon where you like disassemble the cart and you disassemble the wheelbarrow to make something else. So
I think that's cool. I really think they should bring that back. Make these carts more versatile. I think they've done it with boats that had to convert to carts at one point. Yeah,
they've done puzzle boats, and yes, that's obviously also insane because people can't do the puzzle boats and put them together, and then their boat is falling apart.
But when we're looking at carts specifically, we're looking at a really limited Survivor array of things, and this is a unique puzzle for Survivor as well. This arch puzzle, we saw it on a smaller scale last season, and it was on, I want to say, Australian Survivor Brains vs. Bronze, I believe, is the season that it was on down there. But it's just such a big scale, and it sounds like Jeff production has been working to get this to work for a very long time, and they finally got there now.
Yeah,
there it is. Cool puzzle. I like it. It involves physics and thinking and not panicking and yelling at your tribe mates the entire time.
Well, there it is. Lastly, we're going to move into our outlast portion, which the thumbnail of this YouTube video that you clicked on will all make sense. Double Philip, John. Why do we have two Philip Shepherds on the cover with Ben?
When we're looking at our outlast moments, just a reminder to listeners, these are kind of our social moments in the episode, or kind of like our miscellaneous episodes that are moments that can kind of all encompass everything. Because that's ultimately, that's how Survivor has outlasted many other shows, is because it entertains us. And there are a few options we could go with here. Obviously, there's the Ben and Charlie song off, where they're just like listing songs forever.
Yep.
But aren't many comparisons to that in Survivor history. So the more interesting moment, and I mean, like, we could technically talk about like the Rand and Venus alliance thing, but that feels more strategic than social.
There's also like the them discussing the challenge and joking around that felt very Marquesas morning show to me. But ultimately we decided to go with the nickname moment of with Ben, and he was like saying everyone's nicknames.
It was an interesting moment when you look back at Survivor history, because while we have, now I have to remember all of these nicknames we had.
Papaya Papa, Jungle Gem, Tarzan, Benevolence, and that's all I remembered.
Benevolence, there was, what was Maria's? It's something about being a mom, I'm pretty sure. I have no
Maria idea, and which Tim, I think, are the only ones we are missing.
Tim, what was Tim's?
He's Papaya Papa.
No, he's Papaya Papa. So it's Charlie's Tarzan for some. I don't understand how Charlie is Tarzan. I want more explanation on this, Survivor editors, because A, this is a name that two people on the same season wanted to be called. So, like, Survivor history Troy there. Man.
One Troy is Troy because man.
Tarzan's Tarzan.
Yeah.
But this was so weird to have someone else called Tarzan, and then it to be Charlie, of all people. Because everything we know about Charlie is that he's a massive Swiftie. So how does Tarzan play into this?
Yeah, exactly. And he's also not referencing the angels either. Like, there's no, like, Charlie's Angels reference or something in there either. Mm-hmm. So we'll go in chronological order. I'm going with Redemption Island, and it wasn't, and like that version of Stealth R Us, okay? Now, John was like, that didn't happen in Redemption Island. And I was like, oh no, know. It started in Redemption Island. I had just recently rewatched this season and was like, oh, nicknames? It happens at like one tribal council. So we have Boston Rob is the mentalist. Grant is the assassin. Obviously, Philip is the specialist. And then we have the girls as the 3 degrees.
3 degrees of what?
Like 3 degrees of like pain and punishment and like what? 3 degrees of intimidation and yeah.
Okay, they're like okay. 3 degrees
of like their tribe of, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't know. He called them the 3 degrees and then a long-winded monologue. Like right. I was not here ready to like write down this whole that he had.
Understandable. But I mean, we'd be remiss if we were on a podcast on the specialist and not talk about the specialist here. Philip Shepherd was, and like Stealth RS is a wild concept. I don't, I love Philip Shepherd as a character. I know he rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I think he is hilarious TV. I think he's actually represented really poorly in a lot of this because they just like kind of focus on these unhinged moments Cookie of moments, his.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I get it. It's a TV, especially when you look at the way Survivor was edited back then. Survivor was edited in a very different way with their cast. It was cast very differently. So yeah. Whereas in 46, we have these nicknames, and yes, some of them don't really make sense. I can't remember Maria's nickname whatsoever.
No.
Or Moe's. I don't know what Moe's was either.
No.
Probably also, something. I like the fact that they're going by calling her Mo. It makes it so much easier than remembering Mariah and Maria.
True. Yeah, but then you have her twin in Liz.
We don't have to worry about that at the moment. They are not in the same tribe. Out of sight, out of mind. But
back to Philip Shepherd.
But yeah, and this feels like a more natural thing, where it's like the tribe coming together, as opposed to Philip announcing these nicknames for everyone and just announcing his alliance to everyone.
Yeah, and he's also like giving them the nicknames rather than like them discussing nicknames where, you know, Jem was like, oh, Jungle Jem, and they're like, oh yeah, like Jungle Jem, but you're Jem.
And in a jungle. So it makes like sense on multiple levels. I actually really appreciated that one.
Yeah. So like and Tim was the best one at peeling the papaya, so he was Papaya Papa. You know, it these things made sense. Where Boston Rob makes sense as the mentalist. Grant is the assassin because he will kill anyone in the immunity challenges and like take them out. And that's
saying something.
Grant did none of that. And then you had the girls that did what? Nothing.
They were the 3 degrees.
Yes, exactly. But they didn't do well. All right.
No, that's what it is.
Ashley won a few immunities, and so did it. And Andrea won one. But
Ashley was like the closest coming to beating Boston Rob in that season. No one was beating Boston Rob in that season. But if someone was, it was probably Ashley.
I just don't know what strategy she had besides winning 2 clutch immunities that saved her.
I don't either, but it doesn't really matter. It's Redemption Island we're talking about. So,
yeah, exactly. So with this alliance, and he saw how well it worked for him, it got him to the final tribal council. So he took this Stealth R Us plus the BR rules and BR handbook and formed what everyone really knows as Stealth R Us from Karamoan, and that is John's moment for Outlast.
I was really glad McKenna decided to give me the Karamoan one here. Made my life a lot easier because I love this Karamoan moment because it's kind of ridiculous. I just have one question before we move on to Karamoan. How late into the game did that tribal council happen?
I feel like he might have mentioned it pre-merge, but then it really, like, the clip that they played at the reunion was, like, the merge vote. Okay. Where, like, everyone was there, and he was just like, yes, Ometepe.
Right. And there's an intimidation factor to it at that point, too, right? Of Ometepe, hey, we're Ometepe Strong, and we will use these code names to kind of bond us and make it so that, like, hey, this is more than just we were on the same beach to start this game.
Yeah, exactly.
But in Karamoan, it was also, hey, we were on the same beach to start this game. But South Aros goes wild in Karamoan.
Insane. It's like, it makes me feel like it's an actual organization in Karamoan. And like, if you don't have a nickname, like, you're doing something wrong. But also, people with the nicknames are like, this is crazy.
Yeah, it's funny because everyone's kind of humoring Philip in this situation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, sure, whatever, Philip. You go along with it. It's fine. But Philip is, like you said, taking the BR rules that he got from playing Redemption Island and everything. He's applying it to the game in a way where, essentially, this is his version of the buddy system.
Mm-hmm.
You would give everyone a nickname. They feel important. They feel like they're part of something. And you keep using code names. It also really allowed you to make conversation with people not in your alliance and refer to people. It would be weird. Could you imagine? Because there are a few people who weren't in the alliance.
Please, can you regale us with these nicknames?
I can, absolutely. So our original Stealth RS alliance was six people. It was Philip the Specialist, Andrea the Eliminator, which is... Andrea, I think, is the only person to ever have two nicknames in Stealth RS.
She's the only crossover.
Philip was, too. He just kept the same nickname.
Well, why would he change it? He's the specialist.
You had Corinne, the Dominatrix.
Yeah, that's a spicy one.
Malcolm, the Enforcer. So you can kind of see where these nicknames are going, you know? It's the title. Then we get ones that are not titles anymore. We get Cochrane, who is Intelligentsia Attaché, and Dawn, who is True Grit. Don't know why. There was a change in format for the nicknaming. Perhaps Philip just like ran out of titles he could give.
Because Dawn got some True Grit, and based on Cochran's last season, he has that he's the intelligence attaché.
Yeah, it's just so interesting. But then, so this is the original six. They also devise a code name to refer to Brandon as the Conqueror. I don't know why you give your opposition a name like the Conqueror, but they did. And of course, like, Philip's also trying to bring Brandon in with that, and then Brandon does Brandon things and gets ejected from the game.
Yes.
And then as they progress further and there's the swap and everything. Well,
does Eric not get it until at the swap?
Yeah.
Oh.
Brenda and Eric aren't brought into South RS until later in the game, where Brenda is given the title of Serenity. And Eric is given the title of the Silent One, which like really does sum up Eric Reichenbach's game in Karamoan. Yes.
He also died at the end.
Yes, he did. He was not doing well that game. There were only two fans to ever get nicknames in Karamoan. The first was Julia, but she wasn't. She essentially got an audition to be in South R Us.
The vanilla one.
Yeah, well, no, her name was Double Agent, because she was supposed to, you know, flip on the fans. And she was given information from Philip and to, like, you know, test her loyalty. Yeah. It's like that age-old Survivor question of, like, how do you test someone's loyalty? You give them information, see who they tell it to. And she goes off and tells Dawn. And Philip's like, well, can't trust you. That's not happening. And then the further on at the merge, Sherry is Tenacity and is officially part of South RS. And that worked really well for Sherry.
Yes. Yes, it did. So, like, I feel like giving these nicknames and Stealth RS as a concept is really fun. But I think the way Philip goes about it as, like, a control mechanism is like the part that makes it a little ridiculous. Like, if a group of people, like, you know, this Green Tribe was just like, all right, you know, we're going to go into the merge or the swap. I don't know, like green monster strong.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you bring up that point, because that is actually something that mentioned in these episodes. Brandon, as he's growing more and more irritated with Philip, brings up the fact he's giving all these people these nicknames and it's demeaning. Like, he is refusing to use their actual names. He is making a joke out of everything. Why are we humoring this man?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It doesn't feel like demeaning, but like just having these nicknames as like a way to be like part of the cool kids that Philip just made. Like, why is this guy determining the cool kids?
Somebody has to determine the cool kids.
Well, the cool kids got voted out of the fans, so
they did. And I mean, if you're looking at it and we compare it back to 46 again, and it this is the difference between the way Philip Shepherd approached these nicknames with South R Us and how things happened in 46. 46, it was a very much a communal thing, and it wasn't to gain a strategic advantage at all, right? Yes, is this going to bond these six players from the starting tribe more in the future? Quite possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like they're like referring to themselves as an alliance, because there are six of them on this tribe. Like, they're incredibly vulnerable in this position and they're just having fun. I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, both of our moments we've mentioned are Philip Shepherd moments, because those are the predominant use of nicknames in Survivor. And especially of like large groups of nicknames.
And of nicknames of people, because we've started to get like alliance nicknames, but like that's not like specific people. We kind of got it a little bit with Jelinski and Kenzie with Shaggy and Scooby, but that was just like their alliance name. They weren't like, hey, Shag.
Shaggy and Daphne.
Sorry, even, Shaggy and Daphne.
Makes even less sense. Shaggy and Daphne never go off together.
No, yeah, exactly.
But Because of this, right? Like, these nicknames, I'm sure, happen a lot more on Survivor. Obviously, like, in older seasons of Survivor, we see nicknames, right? Like, look at Marquesas, right? We had Mama. We had the General.
Mad Dog.
Mad Dog, right? Like Mad Dog in Australian Outback. Like, especially, it was especially on these seasons where there were people with the same name.
Oh, and Sarge for Leah. Sarge,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, even, like, Boston Rob became a nickname, and like, he's not referred. There's one moment in Marquesas, I believe he's called Boston Rob. I believe John Carroll calls him that at one point. Mm-hmm. But I mean, predominantly that becomes his moniker in All Stars. So it's nicknames have been used to kind of Rocky? Denote people.
Ugh. Rocky, because James is too hard to pronounce.
Well, I'm not crossing that river at all. But like, nicknames have been used to denote people when they have similar names, when they have the same name. And the way we're seeing it in 46, it's a bonding mechanism. I wouldn't be surprised if this type of conversation happens on many other seasons and we just never see it.
Yeah, maybe.
Right? But, can't play.
Yeah, but you know, now we have 90 minute episodes. Well, 2 hour for these two episodes, but
back to 90 minutes next week, though. So it'll be interesting to see how the pacing feels in that one.
Yeah, exactly. I think with the 2 hour episodes, not having a reward challenge really suffered. But yeah, so those are outwit, outplay, and outlast moments. And we are watching episode 3 of Cambodia Second Chances. We got a rat. And speaking of second chances, if you haven't, where have you been? But Phil, Will, and Russell Muscle TV did a whole Second Chances 2 bracket where they Brant sealed everything, and we found out the winner of the next Second Chances 2. So they didn't even have to go out on the island, and we now know. So
yeah, and honestly, if you haven't listened to that, it's a really fun series to get into. There's a lot of great conversation about former Survivor players, and then a bunch of guys doing a Brant steal for the first time, which is always quite funny.
Yeah, exactly. All right, John, the Specialist Universe, what we got going on?
We have a lot going on, as usual. I mean, we have everything happening on the Patreon. We have our Rewind up there as of today. Phil's after show went up yesterday. We still have Every Season's Matter going up. Blake's Casting Perspective. What else do we have? That's everything on the Patreon right now, right? I guess there's still the Will's New Era Rewatch is still going on.
Yes, and there will be a partner show to something you will be announcing when we get to the main YouTube channel.
Okay, well, let's get to the main YouTube channel. We have a lot planned this week. Our episode 3 predictions and power rankings are going to be with the winner of Millennials versus Gen X, Adam Klein. That's going to be in the evening on Sunday.
Yep.
Probably after the Oscars would be a safe bet. I don't know that for sure, but I'd say it's probably a safe bet. Monday, speaking of the Oscars, Monday, Phil and I will be doing the ultimate Adam Sandler bracket for the Cinema Specialist. That's going to be a really fun podcast. Like, if you don't listen to the Cinema Specialist regularly, you should definitely listen to that because
everyone's seen Adam Sandler movies.
I have watched a lot of Adam Sandler movies in order to have this conversation. Phil and I are going to determine what the most perfect Adam Sandler movie is. So we're even going to define what an Adam Sandler movie is. It's going to be a hoot. I promise. Mm-hmm. Tuesday, Phil and Will are recapping Deal or No Deal Island, episode 3. Then, of course, Wednesday, after Survivor airs, you'll have Phil and Will here recapping episode 3. And then Thursday, you know, The Traitors is over. That finished yesterday.
Heck with the Traitors. Make way for The Amazing Race. We are bringing The Amazing Race to the YouTube channel now, and I am so excited. Phil and I will be recapping The Amazing Race. Celestina will be joining us for the premiere, but then Celestina and I will be kicking it over the Patreon still and doing like an Amazing Race kind of after show highlight deep dive. Think Digging Deeper, but for The Amazing Race.
Well, speaking of Digging Deeper, if you didn't catch yesterday's episode of Digging Deeper, where Phil and Blake dug deeper into the idea of do fans really want a Survivor villains anymore, next Friday, you're going to get a brand new episode of Digging Deeper with Phil and Blake. And then, of course, you'll also have McKenna and I coming back with our episode 3 Rewind.
Yes. Alrighty. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening, and make sure to say in the before we go, I have been very much roasted for my very wrong fact of Jelinski being the only one to never vote Survivor, so I apologize, because we've got medevacs, we've got people who have just made the merge and then lost their vote. There's a lot wrong with what I said. So public apology is here now.
It's okay, McKenna. We all make mistakes. It's fine.
The Jelinski moment just felt so different, and I forgot every other moment.
I think it is the first time someone has lost their vote in the first episode.
And he didn't go like deep into the game.
And he didn't use a shot in the dark, which we have seen in opening episodes so far. So it was different. It was still different. It wasn't like it wasn't the first time, but it was a unique time still.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. We're gonna leave now. But before we go, just go over to Patreon, become a patron, and listen to our recap of Cambodia. All right. Goodbye, everyone.
And like and subscribe.